Hi, everybody. Welcome back to What's Next, a West Wing podcast. So happy to be back with, man, this is, I think I said this at the end of last episode, that this is one of my favorite In Excelsis Deo.
Mm-hmm. Episode 10.
Sorry. Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. Anthony gets upset at things, and I think actually once before you got pissed that I didn't introduce you right away.
I did. Yeah. I did. I'm learning to not sweat the small stuff
anymore. Hey! Growth!
Yeah. I still would like a hello when I walk in the room, though.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. But, well, what about when you're 2 hours late?
Gotta be selective.
Anthony was 2 hours late to work last week, and we played a joke on him where no one was going to talk to him. And if he had come up to anyone and was like this, you know, was like upset about it, we were going to spin something back on him. My go-to line was going to be, in civilized countries, when you're 2 hours late, you go up to people and apologize. But he never got salty, so it never got to that. He took it all in good fun. So hi, Ann.
Hey, Joe.
In Excelsis Deo, episode 10. Heavy. Great. What do you think?
Good.
Good?
Yeah.
Just good.
It was probably my favorite episode.
Okay. So then, are you burying the lead? I don't understand. Then why are you like, oh, it's good?
Well, I don't know.
All right. Okay. I don't know what to do with that. Like, it's your favorite episode so far, and you're just like, yeah, it's good. And I'm like, it's great, but all right, whatever. So, ladies and gentlemen, and by ladies and gentlemen, I mean lady and gentleman.
Literally.
Yeah, I think we have two listeners. This is such a packed episode. We're going to do this in two parts. And so the first part is going to encompass things ranging from, if you know, you're interested in one thing or the other, you could just skip to the second episode if you want. But obviously, you guys love us, so you're going to listen to both. But if you're curious, in part one, we're going to cover the Millennium as it was brought up in the teaser, as well as code names. We're going to touch on Mandy a little bit. We're going to talk about the Matthew Shepard storyline in the episode. I think it's the Lowell Idell storyline. We're going to touch on Mrs. Landingham, the president's secret shopping mission. And finally, probably the most packed, we're going to talk about, and it relates to CJ and Danny, but about the crime, the hate crime legislation that they're talking about. In the second episode, we're going to touch on the bigger things that are going on. We're going to talk about, in the second part, gift giving, which isn't a bigger thing, but, you know, we wanted to have that in there as well. We didn't want to make the first episode too packed. As well as gift giving, we're going to talk about Toby's entire story arc, and we're also going to talk about what's going on with Sam and Laurie and Leo and Josh and all that. Those things are a little bit bigger. We're going to do some scene breakdowns and diagrams and really get into the meat, because those are so much more dense and big. And we're also going to get to the stupid ideas that we have in terms of gift giving. Hmm. I think we actually talked about that one time. I gave a boomerang and you got a jar of sand.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
right.
That's right. Yeah.
Very good.
That's right.
So we actually already talked about a little bit of gift giving, but we're going to, I did. Shut up. You may shut up right now. All right. I don't see any women on your arm. Okay. So.
So that she would come back to you.
Listen, man, I was 20. Six? I actually, no.
I mean, that's a great, but, that was
no,
a great idea,
terrible.
Though.
That's terrible. It's a terrible, terrible, there's nothing good about that. There's no, it was just so bad. Like, if someone came up to me and said they were doing that, I'd punch them in the face. I would punch my younger self in the face. I believe that to be true, too. I don't think I'm
26-year-old Joe.
I was older than 26. I was like 29. That's what makes it worse.
I don't know if that's morally permissible anymore.
I know, it's just, it's worse. It's much worse. Okay, so let's get it going. In Excelsis Deo part one. Part uno. That's Spanish for one.
Part one.
Yeah, very mm-hmm. good. Parte uno?
I think so.
You're not sure?
No, parte.
If you don't know, Anthony is actually fluent in Spanish.
Surprise.
Go ahead, give us a little.
Si tú quieres aprender, estoy aquí para...
And
I can be your maestro.
You can be my teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, why did you stop in Spanish? You were going pretty well in Spanish.
I know. Joe locked eyes with me and I lost focus.
Is that what it is? That happens sometimes. Okay, so we're going to start with the very opening, the teaser, where they're all walking through the scene and the idea of the millennium comes up. I wanted to bring this up because Toby's argument is that 2000 to 2001, not Toby's argument, it actually is the millennium. From 2000, going from 2000 to 2001 is when the millennium officially happens. But everyone recognized it as 1999 to 2000. The common sensibility, as quoted by Stephen Jay Gould, I believe Sam said. And I have to say, for the most part, I'm totally Team Toby. I believe myself to be Toby in many ways. But I listened to the scene. I'm like, this is totally something Anthony would be. He'd be like, no, it's not the millennium until it's 2001. Am I right about that?
You are right.
I knew it. Why are you like that?
I don't know.
It's, what is that?
What is it?
What, like, what is that need to, like, be? Because my favorite thing is, too, Anthony's great at this. If I am technical with Anthony, he's like, oh, you're just being too critical. And I'm like, Anthony, that's what you do all the fucking time. Like, literally all of the time.
And you know, and it's the most frustrating thing in the world.
Wait, which part?
When you're so technical with me.
But you're the one that's the thing.
It's, no, sir, you can't be me.
What?
No, I'm the technical one.
Right.
So stop being trying to give it back. I don't want a piece of my own medicine.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm medicining. I don't want you. Medicining. I'm medicining you. I'm administering medicine. That sounds administering medicine.
That's a tongue twister.
No, but okay. So did you, how did you feel? Like, because I was not aware of that in 1999. I was like, oh, the millennium starts in 2000. And had, to be honest with you, had this episode, I'd never seen this episode, I probably wouldn't have even known that 2000, 2001 was actually the millennium. I had no idea.
Oh, really?
Did you have any knowledge?
Yeah, I was like, I was very aware. And actually, like, I remember sitting, I was a little nervous. I don't know why.
Wait, from going from 99 to 2000?
Yeah,
well,
I guess
probably because of all the Y2K,
that stuff.
Drama. But I didn't know that the millennium actually started 2001. I didn't know that.
I did, but at the same time, I also knew why everyone was so scared, because the computers, I was convinced weren't able to handle it. I remember I was sitting in my living room, like, on New Year's Eve. I thought my cable box was going to explode.
Really?
I thought that, like, all my digital equipment.
Wait, let's put some context in that. How old were you then? 12? 11?
11.
Yeah, so
I was 11.
Yeah, so you're a kid. That's fair. If you were like an
and
adult,
all, and like all the adults like around adult, me were scaring the crap out of me.
Yeah, well, that's because they were out giving boomerangs to women, so they did not exercise good judgment. That was their problem. All right, because I feel like that was totally something you would do. I'm glad to know that I was right about. What is that about? What is that in you that wants to be? Because for me with Toby just always seems to. Not that he wants to be smarter than everyone, because we already know he is. I don't know why you're laughing. It's true.
I'm not laughing.
I feel like Toby's just like, he's annoyed when people aren't on the same / proper page. For him, I think it comes with annoyance as opposed to wanting to be right. And I realize that's a fine hair to split, but I think it's worth splitting. Because for me with Toby, I really genuinely don't think he tries or wants to be superior. I think it comes out of, it may like feel that way, but I think it comes out of this idea that it bothers him when people aren't doing, this is very broad in general, the right thing. That's what I think is his deal. So I'm curious just to know what your deal is. And also, if you disagree with me on Toby or if you have something to add on that, please comment. But I'm curious about you.
I know.
All right. Don't do that.
We still got to do this with candles.
I started. Yeah, we're not doing it with candles. It's broad
daylight. No, I think two things. I think one, I've always been the youngest in the group.
Okay.
And I feel like the more I self-reflect about it, I think it's like a way for me to overcompensate how much I know. Because I feel like I have to prove myself to everyone around me because I'm always surrounded by older people.
Okay.
So I feel like that's where it stems from. Okay. Like my desire to just show I can play in the same arena as the people around me.
Now, would you say that that is what Toby is doing?
No, I think Toby, and I just attended Rutgers 2016 commencement, and Obama was there. And in his speech, I think that what he said a part of his speech, what I think Toby is experiencing when he does this. It's the...
Hold on, wait a minute. Obama was at the Rutgers commencement?
Yeah, he was.
I went to fucking NYU, and I got like the police chief. How the hell did Rutgers get Obama? I also did have Neil Diamond sing, so that I'm not going to...
Obama said that Rutgers launched a 3-year campaign. He got 4 letters or something from those student body presidents.
Oh, okay. You know what? That's fair. If they did
Grandma.
That, I did no work for any of that shit. I didn't even know who my commencement speaker was until I showed up. Okay, so that's fine.
It was nuts, though.
I bet it was.
It was like, you know, Fort Knox getting into the stadium.
Yeah. So your point,
So in his speech, he said, you know, ignorance is not a virtue.
You're not fucking kidding.
Not knowing what you're talking about is not cool. And I feel like when Toby listens to people, he's like, "Look, if you don't know what you're talking about, like, just he gets frustrated."
Yeah, you know what? That's very well put, and that's a good connection to what Obama said. Because I think you actually put better what my idea was. I think it really is that. I think Toby gets frustrated when people don't speak with authority. Authority meaning, knowledge and capability.
Yeah. If you didn't hear that speech, I think, and Joe, I don't know, did you listen to it?
No, I didn't even know he spoke there.
Yeah,
I just found out, and I'm pissed because I had Bernard Carrick, I think.
I had Chris Christie.
Oh, wow, you lose. Sorry, we weren't supposed to get political. Fuck, that's my bad. But seriously, though, you lose.
Yeah.
I was about to make a worse joke just now. I'm glad I didn't. I held my tongue. Okay.
No, but if you didn't, I'll send you the speech, and I think everyone should listen to it because I think...
Why don't you post it? We'll post it on
the website.
On the Facebook.
On the Facebook. Because actually...
Ooh.
In his speech, he talks about... I swear to God, Obama's listening to the podcast.
He's not listening to our podcast.
Because he pretty much went through all of episode 9 in his speech.
The short list?
Yeah.
What did he talk about?
He talked about confirmation bias.
Whoa.
He talked about,
Justice Crouch?
No, he didn't do that.
I thought he would have mentioned him by name.
He talked about wisdom versus age. He talked about having a trajectory for your future.
Wow.
He talked about, it was just like all these things we talked about. I was like, oh, wow, we got it. Obama's listening.
Obama's listening. Yeah. He's not listening. If we get like,
can you imagine?
Imagine if we get like a private message from President Obama now because he's listening to it and he's like, "Guys, I am listening. Keep up the good work." If that's the only guy I have, and it's not even like something about like whether or not I'm Democrat or Republican. If I have the president listening to the podcast, I'm not gonna say I can die happy because I won't, but it'll be a feather.
It would,
a vegan feather in my cap. All right, moving on. Pivoting to, I think the thing that we have been looking forward to talking about since we saw this episode, nicknames.
Ooh.
Or code names, I should say. So Allison, CJ has a great moment where she discovers her code name in the teaser is, Flamingo. And I guess it was just recently changed. Because then Sam later on is like, yes, they just changed it. Mine is Princeton. So before we get into us, do you think that is a good nickname for CJ? Code name. I keep saying nickname.
Flamingo?
Yes.
First of all, how do they even come up with these?
I don't know. I don't know who's in charge of that. Google that.
I know, right?
I'm actually going to look it up right now.
I wonder
now.
If that's like a job title. Like you get hired just to do that. Or if it's just part of like the Secret Service. If they like,
I bet the Secret Service have a lot to do with it. But what do you think about hers being that?
I kind of like it. I kind of like it. She is kind of like a flamingo of the White House.
What do you mean by that?
Because she's the spokesperson. She's the one that's flamingos are these like larger than life birds, in my opinion, you know, along with the eagle and like anyway.
Well, they're iconic to be sure. The color, the legs. I just think she's a tall drink of water. So that's kind of where that came from.
I mean, maybe. But no, she's like the spokesperson. She's on stage. She's the one, she's the flamboyant one of the group.
flamboyant.
Yeah, out of all the
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I just think I love the conversation between her and Sam went with the whole Princeton thing, and he's like, you know, that's nice. It's a nice looking bird, and she's like, it's a ridiculous looking bird. He's like, you're not ridiculous looking. And then she's like, I know. Any way for me to get out of this conversation? It's like, I'm going to leave now.
Excellent.
That is because there's no way out of that. And yet, I think it's a perfectly legitimate code name for her.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was before. Where did she go to school? They mentioned it at a certain point. UC Berkeley, I believe, is where she went. What's their... Do you know what their... Maybe it's like a tiger or a bear or something. Yeah, if she would have been bear, that would have been terrible.
Yeah.
What do you think we would have... Okay, if you had to pick... Let's do code names for everyone in the cast.
Like us giving the code names?
Yeah, we're going to give it for... Not the cast, the characters. So so President is Eagle, right? They always say Eagle. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense, right? If you were going to give him a separate nickname... Now, I know more about the President than you do. Like, do you know where he went to college?
Nebraska, right?
No, Notre Dame.
Oh.
So he went to Notre Dame, okay, right? Okay. But if you were going to give him a code name, what would you do?
I would call him the polar bear.
Why? The polar bear?
Yeah. Because they're usually like, you know, like the North Pole or like, I don't know, they're like in the extremes.
They're at the top. Oh, the extreme. I don't, okay.
And then like he's like just this larger than life creature.
All right.
You know, that's just like, and he's big, he's stocky.
See, that's why, my code name for him, and by the way, none of these have to be serious, as you just demonstrated. So mine is going to, because I mean polar bear, but you know, mine's kind of just as ridiculous. The Cabeza. His head is so big. Such a big head. So I would be like, if I was on the detail, I'd be like, the Cabeza is on his way. And then everybody would know the head would be coming down. How about Leo?
Leo, I don't know. I don't know why my head is just going right to animals.
Well, because of flamingo, probably.
Yeah. I want to get away from animals, but Leo's a snake.
Whoa.
Yeah, or like a lizard or like a reptile or something.
Because he's so old and his skin is terrible.
Just, he looks like he has got like a...
No one can see what you're doing right now.
I'm making this like a snout.
Right, no one can see
that. Snouty type
of... Right, no one can see it.
All right.
Snouty type of... Snout. Okay. All right, so lizard or snake.
Yeah, he's always slithering around the office too, Leo. He's like moving. I always
he's
see
like
him just
hobbling
like
around the office.
Moving around from like
what are you talking about?
Room to room.
I would probably give him the code name Scotch.
Scotch?
Yeah. He's an alcoholic. I mean, it's not the most sensitive nickname, but it's a nickname that fits. Josh. First thing that comes to you.
I see Josh as a player. So like...
Player.
Yeah, he's like player. So like
player. Oh my god, player, please.
He's
so gonna.
I don't know.
What would you?
I would call him like Big Daddy.
Oh my god, that's so awkward. All right, Big Daddy's coming. That's dude.
Big Daddy's
just
coming.
If Bradley Whitford is listening to this, this is going to make his day. Although I don't know why that would make his day. With Josh, I'd probably be like something along the lines of like hysteria or teenager or something over the top because he's just so over the top to me. How about Toby?
Hardhead.
That's pretty good.
Hey, the hardhead's coming.
I would probably that's not bad. I'd probably go something like King. King's on his way.
Oh yeah, I bet you
because he's
would.
Just so wise.
I bet you would. Yeah,
he's so wise. How about Sam? I mean, that one's easy for me. Jester, I think I would go with.
What?
I'm fucking with you. I did that. He's so naive. He's like, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
It's not a jester.
I'm just kidding. Not Jester.
Danny Kincannon's a jester.
Court jester is what I meant to say.
Danny Kincannon's a clown.
No, listen. You already know what I think Danny Kincannon's code name is.
Potato Face.
Potato Face, exactly. So go with Sam. Give me Sam.
Sam.
I can't. I know you need to take a time to really think about this because we'll circle back
Thank
to Sam
you,
for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
How about Mandy?
The
bottomless pit.
No, something with like defensive driving.
Defensive driving?
She's horrible at driving.
You? Why do you focus on driving so much with her?
Because that's the one thing of her whole character that sticks out to me.
Oh, you're ridiculous. All right, how about CJ?
I would call her the horn.
Okay, the horn. Very good. Nice.
As in a car horn.
Right, right. I get you.
Okay.
How about maybe like auto insurance? Auto insurance is coming. Yeah. How about CJ?
CJ,
I'm going to give her Spider. She's like really? All limbs to me. She really is. She's all limbs. That's why I'm not that down on Flamingo.
This is going to sound... I have no rhyme or reason for this. But she reminds me of an olive.
You mean like from Popeye?
Yeah. Well, no. But now that you say that, yeah. But like, I was thinking like...
Like a literal olive?
Like a green olive.
Why?
I don't know.
That is so... Wow. What is going on in your head that's making that connection? All right. Green olive coming down the hallway. If you ever come back up with Sam, let me know. Because otherwise, Jester is going to stick.
I'm going to call him you know, I forget it. I'll come back to me.
All right. What do you think your code name should be?
Oh, sorry. I've been thinking about this.
Okay. All right.
I got a couple. All
right.
And I don't know why.
Okay.
So my friend calls me Pancakes.
Okay.
So I think that would be a cool code name.
I think that's a good name.
Hey, Pancakes is coming.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's me.
All right. That's you.
The other thing is I would like it to be something like that I'm not.
Okay.
Or like...
So like a man? No?
Is that not? I was going to go with something like...
What?
I don't know.
Oh,
cut
okay.
me off guard with that. I have no comeback to that.
Yeah, I know. You really
come
don't.
On,
you're trying to, you're trying to come back to that and you just can't do it. You set me up with these things. It's not my fault that I capitalize. All right. So what were you thinking?
I want something like a Spanish name. It's like the Fiesta.
Conquistador?
The Fiesta.
The Fiesta?
Oh, the party's coming. The okay. Fiesta's
oh,
coming.
Oh, right. That's pretty good. Okay.
The Fiesta has entered the building.
Do you have any idea what I think your code name should be? I think I have the perfect code name for Anthony. And I've actually called you this a couple of times recently because of some things that are going on in your life. But I think your code name should be The Professor.
Ooh.
I really do.
That's a good one.
You exude that kind of... I feel like...
You have called me that.
I have, well, because you're going to do some work in that arena. So I just thought, like, that actually really fits. Because at work, we also do, like, oh, if you were an animal, what would it be? So, like, for the longest time, I'm thinking, oh, Anthony's a horse. He'll be the horse or whatever. But no, man, you're the professor.
Ooh, I like that.
You are. You're the professor. Okay.
So what would you be?
If I had to choose a code name... I would probably want it to be very mundane, not very flashy or anything like that. I have no problem with like it being Bobcat because NYU is Bobcats. I've no problem with it being like Met fan or anything like that. So I'm a little boring when it comes to this. I don't really have a preference or anything. Bobcat's totally cool. If you want to make it an animal, like. If you were going to make an animal, I think I most resemble either a dog or a monkey, and I think I'd lean more towards monkey.
You'd be a monkey.
Yeah. So yeah. I would like to be, you know, like monkeys coming by. Because then if I heard that, I would just spontaneously break into monkey walk. My arms would start flailing. And I could do that pretty. I'm not a big dude, so I can't pull off a gorilla, but my gorilla imitation is pretty spot on.
Really? I've never
seen
it.
I'll have to probably, you know what? Maybe we'll do a video of me doing my gorilla.
All right.
And post it on the YouTube, not on the YouTubes, on the Facebook page.
Yeah, all right.
All right, if you had to give me a code name, what would it be?
The Architect.
The Architect.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that is badass. Can you imagine the Architect and the Professor coming
walking
at you?
In, yeah.
Dude!
That's that would be it. Great.
Wait, why the Architect?
Because you have this way.
See, that's way too, like, that's so heavy. Like, I don't, like, it makes me uncomfortable.
You get shot first.
I get,
we got to get the Architect. Get the Architect.
They
the Architect's
me.
In the building.
That's right. Yeah, we don't need the Professor. What that guy? When we blow up the building and the Architect, everything will be fine.
Who cares about that eagle? Get that
Holy
Architect.
Holy shit. All right, Architect. Wait, why Architect?
Because you just have this way of, like, crafting, like, people's perceptions of things. Like, I'll come into a situation.
You mean another word for it is manipulator.
Yeah, well, I'd rather say
architect. I've been told I'm a fast talker, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you are.
the architect, that's a heavy. All right. I'll take it. I really think we should be going from now on when we introduce ourselves as the architect and the professor.
All right.
All right, that's it. By the way, this is not planned. None of this is planned. I'm not even kidding. Like, now all of a sudden we've just created new monikers for ourselves, the architect and the professor. So, wait, are you comfortable with professor?
Yeah, I like that.
Very good.
Hey, can we, let's do animals for each other.
Oh, for each other?
Yeah.
You're the worst.
Wait, if you, all right, yeah, what would you think you are? What would you give to someone else? To me, I'll give you an animal, you give me an animal, I give myself an animal, you give yourself an animal.
I'm telling you, you're the horse and I think I'm a monkey.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think my energy resembles that of a... I'm a little bit more, you know... No, I'm a monkey. I'm absolutely a monkey because monkeys can also kill you. And I feel like dogs are too nice. I know dogs can kill you too, but dogs are too nice.
Hmm.
Oh, I'm a chimp because chimps can be
murderous.
I'd be a great chimp.
Yeah. But why would I be a horse?
Because you most resemble a horse. You're tall, long, you're maybe not a horse because you're not graceful like a horse is. No offense. Dude, holy shit. You might be the flamingo.
Well, really?
What do you think you are?
I don't know. I was going to give myself horse because I'm like, I'm...
Oh, then that works perfectly. All right, I'll give you a horse.
All right, El Caballo.
Yeah, I'll give you the El Caballo. I also think our personalities, like...
Because I'm like hard... I work a lot. Like, people call me a workhorse.
See, but what's funny is I think you might resemble a horse, but I almost feel like your personality is more owl-like.
Really?
Reserved... You know, I don't want to feed the ego and be like, you know, you're a wise person, but I feel like you do have, I do actually think you're pretty smart and you're introspective and all that other stuff. I think there's a stoicism to owls. Like, you never let frustrations exhibit physically. I do all the time. So that's why I feel like I'm more monkey in that way, because dogs don't really do that, right? And while you maybe look like a, I can't believe we're having this conversation. When you may look like a horse, but I feel like owl is maybe more personality. So a horse owl, a howl, an orse.
You'd be a wolf, in my opinion.
Okay.
A lone wolf.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't work well in groups.
Yeah, no.
No.
But yeah, I think like a lone wolf.
An asshole wolf.
An asshole wolf.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very nice. Are we done with this?
Yeah, we're done.
Thank God. All right. That was fun though.
That was fun.
I enjoyed that. All right. We're gonna pivot to, I think, kind of an important, one of the important issues of this episode, which is the Matthew Shepard type story.
We're jumping right into this?
Dude, we're going right into it. I mean, I don't see any reason why not. Because it's one of the things that happens next. And we're trying to keep it at least a little bit linear, even though, you know, we're splitting it up into two episodes and tackling two different subjects. You'll notice we haven't talked about Toby and his storyline, because we're not going to, not at least in part one. So with this storyline, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on with it. But it raises a really interesting question. So Lowell Lydell is I think he's 16 or 17. I forget how old he is in the story, in the episode. But he's beaten with, bottles and sticks and stones and all that stuff. And he's left to die. And he's killed. And he's assaulted because he's gay. And the assailants are 13. And it brings up hate crime legislation. I think Sorkin does a really wonderful job when they deliver the news that he's dead. I think... they do a really wonderful job of taking something that is, from what I understand, a White House tradition of the president meeting groups of children who are, in this case, 7, and juxtapose that against Lowell Lydell dying in the same scene, because the assailants are 13, right? And the president now has to go back and talk to children that are not that much younger than the assailants. And it's really kind of poignantly done in that they're having a conversation that you would expect a president or any famous person to have with kids, you know, like They're asking him questions and he's having fun with them and joking around, and it's innocent and it's light and you can't help but smile. And then in 6 years' time, any one of these kids could be the assailant that kills someone else for being gay. It's just a really poignant thing.
Right.
But I guess let's just get into hate crimes. I mean, CJ is of the disposition that, that it is a strong stance by society to say, we will not only not tolerate crime, but we will not tolerate intolerance. And you levy special punishments for that. So maybe if murder is 25 to life, a hate crime murder is possibly capital punishment is involved. You know what I mean? It just jumps right away. Everything about the circumstance is the same, except now they found out that you killed the person because they're gay or black or whatever it is. How do you feel about legislating? And then Leo and then Sam, you know, they have a very valid argument, which is, I'm not so sure how I feel about legislating against the way someone thinks. We've talked ad nauseum thus far in this podcast about discussing freedom of speech and thought. Like, you have to be able to express yourself. We've also said that the line is drawn when you physically assault someone. But at that point, you've already crossed that line. So what is the benefit? I guess my question is, how do you feel about hate crime legislation? And what is the actual benefit? And what do you believe there might be in terms of a drawback in terms of prosecuting for hate crimes?
Okay, so you're asking me a lot of questions.
I'm asking you a lot.
So, like, the first one is...
So, let's start with one. How do you feel about hate crime legislation?
Like, as it currently stands? Or, like, what's going on in the episode?
In the episode, wanting to put special punishments on people that are found to... Like, again, if you commit murder...
Right.
And it's just the murder, you get 25 to life.
Right.
But if they discover that it was hate crime related... Now you can be punished by death, let's say.
I kind of agree with that.
You do? Okay,
yeah.
Why?
In my eyes, it's almost like a minor form of terrorism.
Ooh. Why do you say that?
Because they're...
First of all, define terrorism as far as you understand it, so that I know what you're talking about. It doesn't have to be the... I'm not asking
terrorism.
For the proper form. I'm talking about how you are relating it, so I can have... I'm trying to do what Obama did and have the ability to talk in this conversation.
No rhyme or reason to instruct fear in other people to get your point across.
Okay, so it's about also... Okay, very good. Okay, so go ahead. So you think it's a form of terrorism. Minor form of terrorism, you said.
And to show that you're more powerful than...
And I think when you say minor, you mean on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
Right, because, you know, people get all nuts with the words that you use. What do you mean that's minor? You know, that bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right.
And the two listeners.
Yeah.
And
they won't. They're fans.
They're cool.
Yeah, they're cool people.
Steve
and Kathy?
I think so. Hey, shout out.
Shout out. Go ahead.
I'm just trying to think about what I want to say, because I think a hate crime is worse than just a regular crime or a murder. Right? And I've always said I think sexual assault is the worst crime that anyone can ever commit. So if there was like a ranking, I think it would be, and this is, I can't believe we're even doing this, I brought it here. But if it was like, I think the worst thing that anybody could ever do is sexual assault.
Okay.
Or rape or anything like that. I think second in line are hate crimes. I think third in line is murder.
Okay. So then my next question is, before next question, it's not Kathy, it's Kelly. I apologize, Kelly. That's my bad.
We love you, Kelly.
We do. I guess my next question is, what is the benefit of hate crime legislation? How does it help? Because if you're doing it to satisfy your own ego, then there's no benefit, and I don't know that that makes it moral.
So, all right, so let's start there, like the morality of it, right? So what makes it a crime?
What makes what a crime?
Anything.
We've created laws that say that you can't do it.
All right. So if you break a law, it's a crime.
Correct.
Okay. So what is the law against a hate crime? I'm just trying to really understand the essence of it.
That's kind of my question to you, because I'm asking, if you are going to enact hate crimes, you already have established that you're going to punish the person for committing the crime. You're just going to add extra punishment or more severe punishment on because it's hate motivated.
And how is the hate assessed? How do we diagnose if it was a hate or not?
If you can establish that the person did it out of prejudice. I don't like gay people, so I'm going to kill him. As opposed to, that guy slept with my wife, so I'm going to kill him. See the difference?
Yeah. So the qualifier is... I don't. So
the qualifier is prejudice based.
Prejudice based, and that could take the form of anything.
I'm almost positive it could take the form of anything. Okay. I mean, any type of discriminatory, like if you killed, I'm sure.
So like the KKK.
But that's an easy one. I'm saying like even like if you killed someone because they had a disability, literally just because they had a disability, that could probably be prosecuted as a hate crime. Because you did. I mean, I don't know that for a fact. I'm sure there's a case of some kind that is in regards to that. But my thing is this: the reason why you have to assess why punishment exists in crime in the criminal justice system to begin with.
I was just questioning.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, like, part of it is recompense. Like, you did something wrong and you need to pay for what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think whether or not it actually gets done, part of it has to be some form of hope of rehabilitation. I mean, I don't know that it's done to the point where it should be. In fact, I'm probably sure it isn't because recidivism is pretty bad. But I would imagine both of those two things are in play. Now,
wait, can we pause there?
Yes.
How do you feel at that point then? An eye for an eye?
I don't know how I feel about an eye for an eye because
if the whole purpose of punishing someone for a crime is to hopefully rehabilitate them or for them to acknowledge that they did something wrong and that they have to change their behavior to live in accordance to a moral society that we've created and put laws on. Right?
Yeah.
So then an eye for an eye really isn't... I don't know if that's...
An eye for an eye is not about that at all. An eye for an eye is strictly about revenge.
Right.
Right.
But governments do that.
Governments do that, yes.
Right. And do you think that there's any virtue in that?
In an eye for an eye? I don't really. But I understand why people want it.
Because
an emotional response.
Absolutely. But I could also see a very nice parallel to that and why hate crime legislation is so much more than just a crime.
Go ahead.
Because what they're trying to do is, I guess the revenge aspect in my head is what's pushing it to be something more severe than what it is. Because not only do they need to be punished for their behavior, but they also need to take into account the pain and suffering and fear that they've instructed in other people.
Sure. Except that my thing is that, does that actually work? Because that's where I was going.
Right.
Does that actually have a tangible benefit? So bring it back to what is the reason why you have punishments for crimes? It's to do the two things that we said, right? Recompense, as well as, which is sort of revengey, but not to the extent of eye for an eye, as well as potential rehabilitation, right? If you enact hate crimes, does that have any real-world effect on hate crimes?
Enact or enforce? Because you keep using enact.
It's not enforce because it's not enforceable. Does it have any sort of real-world effect? Did hate crimes go down when hate crime legislation was brought about? I don't know. And even if it did, I'm not sure that it's because hate-motivated crimes actually went down. It's that maybe their motivations were concealed better. And I think that's where it gets a little tricky for me, is that I feel like hate crime legislation might not do anything other than kind of pat people on the back for being like, we are so against hate crimes that we are going to enact legislation for that, as well as make people that do feel prejudice and all these bad feelings towards groups just to not make their opinions heard more so that they can't be prosecuted for hate crimes. I don't know that it actually prevents hate crimes from happening.
Right, because if we go back to what we were talking about in the last episode, the road to nirvana, so to say, for reconciling an issue is engagement.
Right.
So
that's my thing. See, that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if, you know, you don't maybe if the hate crime legislation maybe if the hate crime legislation wasn't about making it a more severe punishment. Maybe if it made it a different type of punishment, right? Not less severe. Like, I don't think that's the way to go. But let's say you committed a murder and it was like a revenge killing or whatever. Whatever you get for that, you get for that, right? I think I said like 25 to life. I don't think revenge, like heat of the moment, I think that's manslaughter. But I'm not, you know.
And all of our lawyer listeners, if there are any, like, feel free to chime in because we're talking about law issues that we have no idea what we're talking about.
But if you are committing a hate crime, I think it might be interesting that the justice that's being served is not only, you know, the jail time that you would get, but coupled with some type of rehabilitation that made you understand. I mean, even if it's just watching Schindler's List over and over every day. I mean, that's not really the way. Like, but you get what I'm saying? Like,
I don't know
that like adding 10 more years onto it is going to stop a guy from hating black people.
Maybe, but I also don't think on the other side of the coin, I think that it's the rare case that you can change somebody's, you could rehabilitate, quote unquote, their opinion on something.
Well, here's my,
and I want to have hope in people.
That's fair. That is absolutely fair. And I'm not one of these people that thinks that all you have to do is have a conversation with someone every day and they're going to change their mind. I don't believe that. I think that that is a fallacy, and I don't advocate that at all.
I think,
but I also understand the zero sum game of it all. A person that's dead can't change their mind. So if you put to death somebody, you've lost the opportunity to enact change. You know what I mean? Science has its failings, okay? Science has a lot of failings. But I think my favorite thing about science is it gets rid of ignorance. You can't help it, okay? I had my family, we had DNA done. We found out that we weren't from Africa.
We had DNA done.
Yeah,
we
found out like where our, like, I think of myself as 100% Italian because as so far as back as I could trace, my family's 100% Italian.
Right.
So we had like DNA swabs, like we did the swab inside the cheek and had that sent out. We thought we have darker features. We tan really well. We assumed that some of our, and we're from Southern Italy, so we assumed that some of our family was from Africa. And it turns out it's not. It's more of the Mesopotamia, Tigris, and Euphrates area. So we have Middle East in us.
Hmm.
We also found that there's a very, very small percentage that comes from India.
Wow.
There's some European. The bottom line is, someone might look at me and think, oh, that guy is white. I am not. I am 67% or whatever it is Italian. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you just go ahead and understand the science of evolution and you break this shit down, at the end of the day, you have to understand that the difference between someone who's black and white has nothing to do with intelligence or this or that or anything other than where you were born, where your family that descended from, where they were born, the environment that they were around. And eventually, that shit has to sink in. Perhaps it won't sink into someone's lifetime who's like 40 years old and committed a crime and killed a black guy because he hates black people. Maybe that guy just can't live long enough to understand that there is no difference between him and the other guy as far as, you know, biology is concerned. But if you do not try, if you just sentence that guy to death, you never have that opportunity, ever. And
you
never
know
what you're capable
of. In a lot of cases, too, it becomes a catch-22 because if someone is that radical enough to commit a hate crime and then you bring to light that they're actually part of the issue that they're projecting hate against, I can even see that person committing suicide or killing themselves. And then what are you going to accomplish?
Maybe that almost is sentencing him to death. Well, yeah, but I don't know that that actually would happen. I think that they would deny it more so than they would become a self-hater. That's like Chappelle's, one of Dave Chappelle's first sketches where he was the blind KKK guy. He never knew he was black. Chappelle's pretty funny. And he actually ended up hating himself. He divorced his wife because she loved a black guy. That's the guy's, that's the sketch. It's really funny. But again, I'm not this bleeding heart in terms of people and think that, you know, people can just be changed with conversations. But I also know that if you don't try, you're never going to get anywhere.
Right.
And how do you advance if you don't try? You have to at least engage somewhat. I'm not saying give the guy a lesser sentence. I guess my bottom line is this. I don't know how I feel about hate crimes. Hate crime legislation, I mean. Because I just don't know what the benefit as currently constituted is. You know, the same way that you look at drug issues and you say, okay, perhaps you shouldn't throw a guy in jail for the rest of his life for getting busted with, you know, cocaine or not cocaine, because it's really crack. Maybe you should have a different attitude towards hate crimes.
The other thing is, though, all right, yeah, maybe.
Just in different treatment, in different ways of treating.
But then, yeah. But also then, where do you draw the line? Like,
how do you mean?
Like, I can see anything be considered a hate crime. As how we're talking about it.
Well, it's based on prejudice, so I'm not really sure what you mean.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're prejudiced against anything, like if I'm prejudiced against drug dealers and I start killing drug dealers,
I don't think that's not really recognized. I mean,
is it about protected populations?
I think it's a little bit more different. I mean, I think they also, you know, because drug dealers can't, they're not going to fight for civil rights. Like, drug dealers need... You're talking about a profession as opposed to a subset of peoples. So I don't think that applies.
All right, yeah.
I don't think that applies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's very difficult. I'm not really sure how... I don't know how I feel about it. I'm not going to pretend to know what the right answers are. I just... It makes me a little uncomfortable because... I don't know that it works. If it works, then maybe, okay, hey, whatever, that's fine. But I don't know. To me, I'm not really sure it works.
Yeah, is there any way to figure out, like, stats on...
I'm sure there are stats. I'm not really... We can look those up, and maybe we probably should have done that before this. I don't know that we thought we were going to get to this place. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure how I feel about it.
All right.
So I wanted to point out something else in this episode. I only want to take a little bit of brief time because everyone hates on Mandy. I don't want to take too long, but this is the reason why people hate Mandy. Look at all the serious things. We haven't even touched on Mrs. Landingham yet. We're not going to talk about in this episode what's going on with Leo, Lori, Sam, Toby, Josh. And this is what's happening with Mandy. Mandy's just going around being like, the Dickensian hats do clash with the Santa costumes, and why can't I send some photographers along with you? This is why the character's hated. You cannot blame, like, the actress or the character itself. It's just poorly underwritten. And this is the best fucking example of that. And I just wanted to point that out. All right?
Thank you.
Hashtag defend Mandy.
Hashtag I'm glad she didn't drive everyone to this bookstore.
That's too long of a hashtag. No one's going to do that. No one's going to do that.
I'll do it. You know what? I'm posting that on the Facebook page.
You can, but I don't even remember what you just said because it's too long of it.
Well,
no.
Check it on the Facebook page.
Check it on the Facebook page.
The What's Next podcast.
Stop with that. You're wrong with that. So before we get away completely from hate crime legislation, there's one subset of things that's going on in that. That has less to do with hate crime legislation, has more to do with romance. What?
Ooh.
What did he say? Hate crime romance? No, I didn't say that. There was a comment in there that I did not acknowledge. It's what's going on with CJ and old Potato Face. I just added the old in there. He's not mm-hmm. old. I think the potato is old.
And the face makes him look old.
Well, the old potato is what his face looks. Okay, so how do you feel about their romance now starting to blossom?
I love it.
I know you do.
I love it.
It's getting a little tiresome to me. The only thing that keeps me interested is CJ, Allison Janney. She's the best.
Why do you find her attractive?
I do find her attractive, but I that's not why. I just think she's so... I mean, that whole thing with my Secret Service code name is Flamingo. I have to feed my fish. I was like, what the fuck? And then only... I mean, like, who else makes that? Who else makes that line that? Who? And you know just how fucked up that is. Because then Josh is like, how's it going, Danny? And then he's like, hard to say. I agree with you, old potato face. It is hard to say. Why do you like their dynamic so much?
I don't know. It's scandalous.
You know, it's based... Did I tell you that it's based in reality?
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Dee Dee Myers, the White House press secretary for Clinton, I believe, started dating and is now married to a reporter.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That it was in the White House press pool.
I like their relationship.
Do you like Danny for her? I think she can do better.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
But I like their dynamic. I think it's playful.
He's good. I'll give him that. He's really good at Sorkin dialogue. He's really good. So they have... I will agree with you. They have a very good
dynamic.
And I think
they both want it.
That's all. They just want it.
They do.
They
look
do
at them.
Want it, yeah.
Yeah, look at... Like, CJ wants it. Look at... Danny Kincannon's like all about it.
Danny Kincannon is so all about it. CJ is playing it cool.
She is playing it cool.
She has to. I mean, she's the one.
But that's what makes it fun.
It does. It makes a lot of fun.
That's usually me in the relationship anyway.
Playing it cool?
No. I'm Danny Kincannon.
You are totally old potato face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like all absolutely. About it. Like I can't even hide it sometimes.
I think I'm more potato face than
I wonder if that's just like a guy thing. Like if we really
the pursuit,
like
maybe like, it's
like men that... like when they really like somebody. And maybe just women do a good job of hiding it because I don't think
you just have to convince women to be with you.
Yeah, maybe.
Sorry.
What about you?
You're
the
do
same
I have to
way.
Convince women? What does that mean? I'm the same way.
You just said that you're Danny Kincannon.
Hold on. Let me ask you a question. Do you make pros and con lists?
I used to.
You see, I've never done that. You used to.
Yeah.
What is that? What?
I had to weigh my options, Joe.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Like, what would you put on these lists?
Like the big things. Like, do you think she'd get along with my family? Do you think that, you know, she
could... For a girl that you're going to date?
Yeah.
That comes later on.
I always consider dating serious. I don't know. Can she take my sister shopping?
Can she take my sister shopping?
Like, I used to, like, really put these...
Because
now I don't...
all women like to shop, right?
No, well, no, but, like,
wow.
there's certain things that wow. I can't provide
my
sisters.
Can she cook for me?
Oh, stop it. Now you're getting ridiculous.
Can she pump out 10 kids and can she be barefoot all the time? Wow.
Well,
this is some...
Joe is showing his true colors right now.
No, you are. You're the one that's making the list. My list would be, like, can she be independent? And not
go fuck yourself.
I know. Okay. That's fair. There's only two things on my list. Does she like baseball and animals? And that's it. That's all that's on my list.
Does she like baseball?
She doesn't
and
even
animals?
Like. To, she doesn't even need to like baseball. Because to be honest, I want people to leave me alone when the game's on.
So that would be on your list now.
I don't have a list. There would be no list. There's only one thing that matters to me.
You have to have a list. Animal.
I do not have a list.
You have to have a
there's
thing.
There's no list.
We've talked about this before. All right. What's a deal breaker for you?
Cannot understand where I'm coming from in terms. If you're one of those people, I recently, you know, vegans get hit pretty hard for A, being mean, and B, being righteous. And I always found that to be funny. I think that that is not endemic of vegans. I think it's endemic. I think that's just what people do.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at work the other night and there was a guy that knows me, that's known me for a while and knows that I'm vegan. And he's like, oh, how you doing? You look good. You still being vegan? And I'm like, yeah, I am.
You're
and
still
the
being
guy,
vegan?
And the guy, well, people think that for a lot of people, I guess it's a diet, not a lifestyle, which is fine. But the guy next to him is like, oh, what made you go vegan? I'm like, well, I got a dog and I realized, you know, shortly thereafter, a dog is a pig, is a cow, is a chicken. Like, I could no more eat a dog than I would a pig. And he's like, oh, you're afraid your dog wouldn't taste good? And that was the first thing that I was like, all right, whatever. I don't want to have this conversation. I'm trying to be polite because if I have this conversation, I'm going to eviscerate you. But I'm like, no, actually, you know, I'm afraid that he would taste good. That's the problem because, you know, that's the issue with pigs and cows. They taste good. I just recognize them as sentient beings and I don't want to eat them. And then he kept going and he was like, I tell you what, if I would choke my dog out, you know, I love him, but I would choke him out and feed him to my kids.
At this point, did you walk away?
I was like, oh, okay. Maybe I should have your dog. Maybe you're not the best. He's like, no, listen, they don't have the ability to reason like us. I was like, okay, well, if that were the case, then we'd be getting a lot of humans off this planet too. He's like, oh no, totally true. Totally in favor of killing them too. And then he's like, do you have kids? And I'm like, no. And he's like, oh, that's the reason why. And I'm like, and I didn't, I was like, okay. And that's when I walked away because he actually undid.
Good, Joe.
He undid his argument. He first said the reason why we are more superior to animals is because we have the capacity to reason. But then he used him having children as the reason why, and me not having children, as the reason why I couldn't understand his argument. Having children is a biological thing. The only reason why you love your children and don't fucking kill them when they're screaming little infants and babies is because nature has designed you to find them cute and love them. There is no reason at all in that. In fact, you care more about your kids than you care about anyone else's kids. And that's not necessarily reasonable. There's no reason in any of that. So this guy is just, I didn't bring up the conversation. He's just throwing, you know, incendiary thing after incendiary thing. Like, I tell him how much I love my dog, and he talks about how he's totally willing to kill his own dog by choking it, no less.
Mm.
And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, okay, if you're that guy, if that kind of attitude and opinion is in a woman, yeah, we're not going to work out. But if you can see where I'm coming from, we got a shot.
Hmm.
But that's the only, you could hate baseball. In fact, I've dated women that hate baseball. That's fine.
Hmm.
Just don't bother me when the game's on.
Wow. That was a.
That's it.
That was passionate.
Hey, you know how I feel about animals. And I try not to, I don't try and bring it, but I'm surrounded by it all the time and people saying shit to me that's just so stupid. And I'm like, how are vegans the ones that get said as being X, Y, and Z?
Hmm.
When I've got people like this saying shit like this to me, like all the fucking time. How's that even possible?
Hmm.
How's that? I'm asking.
I think that you might be using the vegan label as a way to circumvent who you, I think that the whole conversation started because of the whole veganism, right? That's where it all,
right. But
that's
I didn't bring it up.
I know.
Like, I
right?
didn't engage it,
but that's where it all started, right? Because you were talking about that, right? Cause that one guy said,
he was talking about, not me, but yes.
But I think that just, to answer your question, I think it has to do with who you are as a person, not because you're a vegan, but who you are as a person.
I don't know what that means.
It's a personality difference, I think, or just like I don't want to say intelligence difference, but it's a higher form of self-reflection and self-thinking and self-awareness that you have. That I think other people might have a less degree of.
Right. I just meant like, that's not, I wasn't even, thank you, but that's not even what I meant. I just meant like, how is it that, you know, people are always so in my face about veganism when I am never, I mean, you know,
because it's an open target. Because it's an open target.
Right. But maybe. All right. This is getting boring to me because I have to deal with this every day and I'm not interested in dealing with it now. Pivoting to.
Do you want a hug?
No.
Oh, okay.
When do I ever want a hug?
I'm going to get you one day.
That is so fucking creepy. All right. Let's pivot to the last thing that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Mrs. Landingham. and the kids. What did you think of that story? Did you see it coming?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Did you like it?
Did I like it?
Did you know that Catherine Justin, who plays Mrs. Lanningham, didn't become an actor until she was like 57 years old?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's inspirational.
She's one of those inspirational stories of people that was like, you know what? That's a fun fact for women that didn't know that.
That's great.
Yeah, she decided that she just wanted to do it, and she did it. And she had, I think she actually only recently died. I'm almost positive.
Oh.
But I'm almost positive. I'm not sure if that's true. But it's one of those things where she made a really good career for herself.
Yeah.
But I think what I really like about this story is that it's foreshadowed in episode 3. I don't know if you remember this.
Episode five?
I don't know. It's Crackpots and These Women. When
episode 3 is a proportional response.
Very good. So if episode 5 is that one, Crackpots and These Women, it's when Sorkin is doing his misogyny thing where he's like, oh, you know, we're marveling at all these women. CJ is like this and this one's like this. And then he says something like, and Mrs. Lanningham, can you imagine someone that wants to work for the government when she's lost two of her sons? I think he says in war, and it's never paid no mind until this episode. And she gives that story. I don't know if Sorkin planned it that way.
I didn't even realize.
Yeah, you didn't run. Yeah, no. I look. I don't know if he planned it that way, but I also think it's kind of cool that it comes to fruition in an episode in which you have Toby's storyline with the veteran that died, the fact that her kids were killed in Vietnam. It was really nice.
Yeah.
Did you feel anything about it in general? Like it's a pretty on the point, on the nose story. That she gives, but I thought it just fleshed out her character very, very well. The way she delivers it is fucking crazy.
Yeah, too. You know, I think all of my uncles have been in the military, and like a different branch of the military. The Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, the Army. None of them died there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And actually, I know a lot of my friends, or even like just, I know tons of people that have joined like the military. I know, and none of them have died.
Wow.
But I can't imagine how it would be if one of them did, and let alone beat one of my offspring.
Yeah. Both of them.
Yeah.
Two of them.
It touched me.
I think the thing that's most telling about the story is how matter of factly she says it. There's no emotion. And it's either smart on her part or the director's part, or maybe Sorkin wrote it that way, like in the dialogue, wrote like, says it very matter-of-factly, because I think it must have been around 20 years since her kids passed. She's probably dealt with this for so long. It's like when a bad thing happens to you and you have to tell the story, you can barely. A coworker of ours lost a couple of people.
Right.
And when she was trying to tell the story, she would break down.
Mm-hmm.
6 months, 7 months removed, she can now talk about it, and it's harder for her to break down. It doesn't make it any less emotional, but it really kind of hits Charlie because, you know, Charlie's like, you seem a little down towards the holidays. And she just says, yeah, I just miss my boys. She's had to deal with this for so long, is my point, that she can tell the story, say it matter-of-factly, and someone is just watching her talk about how she lost the kids. And someone might say, like, she doesn't seem like she cares at all. But if you know anything about loss and grief, it gets easier to tell the story in time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make the pain any less easy, as evidenced by the fact that she still cannot enjoy Christmas. That's the nice little thing in that, as far as a writing and acting thing. That's why, because like if this were done on like a show that's out now, like one of these, you know, Madam Secretaries or any of these shows, these soap operas, these Grey's Anatomies, you know, there would have been... The woman would have been breaking down, like, you know,
right,
Ms. Lanningham
right,
breaking
right.
down, or they've been really dramatic, or, you know, but it's not that. You look back at that scene, the pain is still so resonant, but the details you can just say.
Mm-hmm.
And that is real life. That's why I really like that moment.
Yeah, it was a touching moment, but that it makes me think of other things too. Like around the holidays, do you know people who just get sad?
Yeah, a lot of people do.
But why?
I think it's because holidays are meant to be happy, and if they're not happy, it makes them that much more sad. For whatever reason, they're not. Happy.
Really, you think that's what it is?
I absolutely do. Yes, you know, people that maybe never got married. People that never had kids, and these are the things that they wanted. People that weren't more successful in their jobs. They think of,
I know.
They think at these times as being idealized as being happy. They realize they are not happy, and they're not happy when everyone else is happy in a time you should be happy, and it doubles down the pain even more.
Interesting. I've seen some pretty depressed people who can't wait for the holidays because
they're looking at one of them right now. I'm just kidding.
No, because like the whole sense of community, just the whole general energy in the air.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people that are without, and when they see other people celebrating time that have,
maybe
it's hard. And I understand that. I know some people that are like that. I also know some people that you're talking about that get happier. I get happier towards Christmas. I really really love Christmas. I used to love Thanksgiving. Now I hate it because of all the murdering of turkeys. But I love Christmas, and I'm not a religious person. You know, I am not married. I don't have kids. So it's not like I'm like, oh, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I just really enjoy the holiday. I like being with my family. The thing that you're talking about, I really enjoy that part. So
I can appreciate, but I don't get like that just because of a holiday. I mean, I love Christmas just like you, and Joe loves Christmas. You should see his place around Christmas time.
I really do. I think it exacerbates an already existing problem. I think that's what it is.
Maybe, but I can argue that for at least one in every season.
Except, yes, I agree. You know? But that's why I think that's also why people get sad at birthdays, at other people's happy events. Why are people always unhappy at other people's events? I think it's because of things like that.
Hmm.
I think it's always a reflection of you. You know, if you're in a happy place, a happy event will amplify that happiness. If you are at a sad place, I think the happy event has the chance to amplify the sadness, especially if other people are enjoying themselves.
Possibly, but there's also the whole notion of emotional contagion.
Yeah, that's true too.
You know?
But there are some people that are so enclosed in their own space that they're not open to that.
I can think of a something that makes me happy in every single season except for spring. I don't like spring.
Why?
I don't know. I don't like spring.
It rains a lot in spring.
Spring needs to make up its mind, honestly. Is it cold? Is it hot? Is it rain? Is it sun?
Spring doesn't have a mind.
It should, and it should make it
up.
Well,
whether it should or shouldn't, it doesn't. So.
Mother Nature needs to figure that out.
Technically, you're wrong. I'm going to end this episode the way it began and say that is technically not correct. Mother Nature is, in fact, not a person, nor does it have a mind. So you're wrong about that.
And I think that you need to be more imaginative.
I am much more imaginative than you are.
I highly doubt
that. That is such a strange way to be like, yeah, I got my imagination's bigger. I'm gonna go get an imaginary Ferrari to prove that. I don't have an imaginary inferiority complex. All right. That's it.
What?
Episode In Excelsis Deo, part one, done. If you like this, cause of course you did. Listen to part two. That's coming up. That's going to be Toby and everything that's going on with him. And there's a lot there. Sam, Lori, everything with Josh and Leo, everything there. And we're talking about gift-giving.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to talk about boomerangs a lot.
No more sense.
We're going to talk about other things. Expensive things and whether or not that's the right way to go. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Anthony, did you have fun doing this half?
I did.
I like this.
Can we sign off as our code names?
Oh, we're going to. This is the architect saying goodbye.
And this is the professor. Out.
Oh, man.